We're doing Pele Yoetz, and we're learning a piece called Avas Ish Ve'Isha. And you know that the Pele Yoetz picks up topics, and he organizes them in a sequence by Aleph Beis. So we're still in the letter Aleph. It could be that next week we'll get to Beis. I don't know. No promises. But he's up to Avas Ish Ve'Isha. Now let me just give you a little bit of an introduction to this chapter. It's a very unique chapter in the sense that the very topic that he chose, the Pele Yoetz, is paradoxical. It's almost self-contradictory. Because on the one hand, the Torah puts the love of a man for a woman on a very high level. And it's not just a matter of option. It's an actual requirement. Within the context of marriage, there's got to be a mutual reciprocal love. But on the other hand, there are situations in which the marriage is just not going well. And Yadus doesn't believe in Catholic marriage. The Torah has a parasha of Gerushin, and if need be, you have to separate. You have to divorce your wife. But the paradox is that Chazal assume Me Hashem Ish LeIsha, which means that your choice of a wife is not just coincidental. It's not just your own personal decision, but it comes from Shamayim. And if it comes from Shamayim, then you have to do your best to make it work. What do you do in this case of a difficult marriage? So let's start from the beginning. Avas ish ve'ishu dover shebechova. It's not a matter of option. The love of a man for a woman is obligatory. Shehei beinayim, there must be between them ava aza, very strong love. And he says, based on a Gemara in Yevamos, which the Rambam actually codifies in Hilchos Ishus, chayav li'ava kigufo ulachavda yosem migufo. So let's try to understand this Gemara. A man has to love his wife the same way he loves himself. Because the ultimate love that a person can have for anyone on the face of the earth is love for himself. And now he has to equalize, he has to live up to that high level in the case of Avas Ishto. It's got to be an Ava Kigufo. However, when it comes to Kavod, which means honor, for example, treating her in a certain way, buying things for her, supplying her with everything she needs. Here, Yoser Migufo. Now we can go even beyond his own goof. He's got to supply her on the highest level that he can possibly have, given his financial capacity, even beyond what he would allow for himself. We say Fargin for himself. He himself would not spend $250 on a suit, but he would spend that much for his wife. So that means he's giving more kavod to his wife than he's giving to himself. You can't say he should love his wife more than he loves himself, because the ultimate love that a person can have, the maximum in the natural world, is the way he loves himself. So to say that he love her beyond what he loves himself is impossible, but love her the same way you love herself in an equal equilibrium. However, when it comes to kavod, now we're talking about the love manifesting itself in action and giving kavod. So he's got to give kavod to his wife where he himself would not demand kavod for himself. In other words, he himself might say, I don't care. And the Israelis would say, Ani mevater. You know, I waive my rights to this. But don't waive the rights of your wife. And we'll soon see that this becomes very important when it comes to Yom Tov. Because with regard to Yontif, the kavod that a husband has for his wife is part of his obligation of what's called v'simach es ishto, that he has to gladden the heart of his wife. Therefore, he should buy her begadim noyim, begadim tzivonim, your colored garments. He should buy her tachshitim if he can afford it, whatever he can afford. So this is another expression of kavod. However, everything has a paradox. And the paradox is that sometimes the love that a person has for another human being, in this case for his wife, could become an impediment to his love for God. Because if he loves his wife to an obsession,
he'll forget about God.
I don't know if he'll forget about God, but he'll have no time for God. So that's what he says in the third line here, Ephes. Ephes means up to but not beyond.
I thought Ephes is zero.
Well, in this context, Ephes means as long as Ki lo yimna bi'avaso osam yavodas Hashem yisparach, as long as he won't be prevented through his love for her from serving Hashem properly.
She might want to violate the Torah.
Well, he's not up to that yet. That'll come down the line. He's talking a man who dedicates so much of his time. He wants to spend every single moment of his time with his wife. He has no time for study of Torah. Okay. He has no time for praying the way he should be and for other mitzvahs. You know, it's very fascinating. The Rambam in Hilchas Tshuva, when he wants to give a paradigm of man's love for God, does anybody know which metaphor he uses?
Love for his wife.
Excellent, the love for his wife. He should love God. And if you want to know how lovesick he is for God, he gives you the example of a man who's lovesick for his wife. He drinks, he eats, I remember when I got engaged, I was thinking about my fiancé all the time, that when my Rebbe called on me in class, I thought he would call me by my fiancé's name, because he realized that's where my brain was. And that's the truth, that you become so obsessed with this love for a woman that you can somehow neglect and ignore your responsibilities, your obligations in Avodas Hashem. So that's what he says, Ephes. He says there's a ceiling. In other words, you should love her, and you should respect her even more than you'd respect yourself, and give her more than what you would give yourself, but there's a limit. This love cannot, if it interferes with your ability to serve Hashem, that piece of love is not part of your obligation, it's not part of the mitzvah of Avas Ish Le'ishto. And that's why the famous statement of the Mishnah in Avos, Al Tarbe Sicha Yemisha, it's very nice for a husband and wife to have discussions, and they should have discussions. You know, in Halacha there's something called Shana Rishona, the first year of marriage, when the relationship is being formed and solidified, and there you spend a lot of time with your wife, but it's not ad infinitum. It's not like an open-ended check over here. Al Tarbe Sicha. And how do I know, how can I gauge the barometer when it's Ribui Simcha, a Sicha, when it goes beyond? And the answer is, as soon as it interferes with my ability to serve Hashem, then I know I've exceeded beyond the limit. And Be'ishto Amru, the Mishnah explicitly says that this applies not only to some other woman that you're not married to, that's for sure, but even to your own wife. And if you are marbis sichaim ishto, if he goes beyond the limits, then gorem ro liatzmo, he's going to cause himself evil. So the Peleoids on the one hand says that we have to love a woman, a wife, as I love myself, and I want to spend a lot of time with my wife in the context of that love. I want to be socheach, I want to get into sicha. Sicha usually means a more profound discussion, not just about superficialities. You're not just talking about the weather conditions, you're talking about something more significant in life. But not ribui sicha, not to overstep the bounds. Now, he asks the following question. What is another dimension? We've spoken about avot for a husband to his wife. We spoke about kavod for a husband to his wife. What is the third dimension of a man's relationship to his wife? And he says the third dimension is to love her nefesh.
Her soul.
Her soul. A lot of people think that love is purely physical. It's all about of attraction. Obviously, that has to be there, but that's not enough. The primary love should be for the nefesh. And that's what Yadus puts the emphasis always, the primary emphasis is on spirituality. You have to be in love with this woman's nefesh. You have to believe that she represents a very unique nefesh, and especially for you. Now, if you love her nefesh, then there's another element that enters into the equation. If I love your nefesh and I care for you, I have to be there for your, interested in your well-being. But again, well-being on the hierarchy, what would be the top of well-being? Would it be physical or spiritual?
Spiritual.
Spiritual. Spiritual always comes first. That's part of the world of eternity. So therefore, in the context of his love for his wife, which now is an avas ha-nefesh, he now becomes responsible to make sure that he guarantees, to the extent he can, obviously, her well-being. And her well-being means what?
Spiritual.
Spiritual. And that's called the mitzvah of tochacha. Tochacha, which literally translates as chastisement, or to what we say, to give an ethical or a moral directive or guidance to another person, that becomes very, very important. It takes on a special, special significance within the context of avas ish l'ishta. And where do I see this in the Peli Yoetz? He writes, olav mutal, it's his responsibility, lahochicha, to give hotochacha, but then he adds two words, benoam siach. There are the two ways of giving, of castigating a person. It could be very harsh, or it could be benoam siach. Benoam siach means in a very soft kind of way. Now he's going to get into very specifics. What areas of spirituality should the husband be careful to make sure that he's guiding his wife, he's keeping an eye out, to make sure that her well-being in the spiritual world is being achieved? Number one, he says, ladricha, to guide her b'darchei tzniut. Tzniut means modesty, so he has to be, again, everything is benoam siach, in a very soft kind of way. And he has to indicate that he's pleasant because he loves her, and this is in the context of his avas nefesh for her. Number two, l'archika miloshen hara v'kas, who klolos v'askos Hashem v'antola. Also to make sure that she doesn't speak things that she shouldn't speak. She doesn't get angry. She doesn't curse people. She doesn't mention God's name in vain. V'kahena, he says, etc., etc., seder noshim, seder nezikin. Seder noshim means anything that specifically applies to women. Those areas of law that apply to women, whether it be tzniut, whether it be the laws of nida, and zikin, which means the general ethical area of life. Lazira, then he goes on to say, bidikduke ha-mitzvus, that he should try to impress upon her how meticulous she should be about the observance of mitzvus, ubefrat, and especially b'chol tfilos, he says, especially with regard to tefillah. Now, why is a husband looking out for the benefit of his wife that she daven properly and at the right times? A woman is so preoccupied with so many responsibilities, it's very common for tefillah to go by the wayside. So therefore the husband has to be very careful. He has to make sure she has time for davening, and not only time for davening, but make sure that when she dedicates her time for davening, that she's not disturbed. That's also part of the husband. You know, today I don't have to tell you, we're not just up to phones. You know, we got text messaging, and we have WhatsApp, and it keeps going on and on. Somebody told me that WhatsApp is already outdated. I don't remember all the new ones. So she has to have peace and quiet. You know, sometimes it means that he has to allow her to lock herself up in a room so that she can concentrate on her prayers and not be disturbed by anyone else. He becomes like the bouncer there. He stands in front of this and he doesn't let all the people who want to get to her disturb her.
So that means that he would have to take care of the baby so she could die.
Right.
That's right. Ubirchas hanenim. Make sure that she is absolutely, versed in the laws of Birchas HaNenim. Again, at this point, the Peli Yoetz is assuming that the husband knows beings about Birchas HaNenim. You know, Birchas HaNenim is a very complicated, I don't have to tell you, very complicated area of halacha. In fact, back in the day when they wanted to test a potential groom who would go out with a girl, then the way they tested him, they would bring out different fruits and cakes and see which bracha he made first. They knew if he was careful about Birchas Hanenim, then he was a shtickle talmud chacham.
What does Birchas Hanenim?
Nenim means when you enjoy something, when you eat something, when you smell something, you know, before you enjoy this world, you have to acknowledge God by reciting a bracha. David?
It sounds in the way the Rav is reading that the man really knows better in these areas. Is that how we want to understand this now?
So in a very simple way, the Peleoids lived two centuries and change ago. He is what you call part of the modem or the model that is classical husband and wife. Things today have changed, so we're going to have to sort of adjust things. The second half of this essay, as you'll soon see, is about what she has to take care of for him to make sure that he's on the right path. But right now, he's talking about the rabbi of the family, the rabbi of the marriage relationship is he and not her. Why? Because he's well-versed in the law, he understands what the Torah demands, and she is learning from him. That's a very classical, today you might call it an old-fashioned way of framing a marriage, but that's what he is. Then he speaks about Shmirah Shabbos. The laws of Shabbos are very meticulous, very particular, very complex, and she will look up to him. Now, very often she gets very disappointed because when he admits ignorance, he doesn't know the answer to her question. She gets very nervous about that. You know, I married you under the condition, under the assumption that you would be able to answer every single question I have. And then, lo and behold, you're eating the rabbits. You can't answer my questions. So that's a little bit of a bone of contention in marriage.
Yeah.
But the Peleoids is going to say that there's a much more far-reaching bone of contention in marriage that's so common, and that's what he's going to warn us about for the sake of Shalom Bayis. We'll get to that in just a minute. He says the following, that it would be very nice for a husband to sit down with his wife and study together. Now, I have to tell you, Rabosai, in classical marriages, that's nearly impossible. Who has time for that?
Nobody.
But in the ideal world, the marriage relationship in a love context, because again, we're talking about loving the nefesh, should express itself in study together. And therefore, he says, Matovu Manoim Lilmod, to learn with her, Divrei Musar. And he says he should always talk to her about that which is very severe in halacha. And look what he says at the end of this paragraph. I'd like you to underline these words. My eyes popped out when he said this. He says, "Ki oz, if he succeeds in transmitting to his wife the severity of the law, oz yechrad liba, her heart will be even more God-fearing." And she'll be careful and meticulous about observance. Yosef min ha'ish. It's like the student, the disciple, supersedes his Rebbe. And in this case, he's saying that a woman, once it sinks in, you know, once you succeed in your education and you guide her to understand and appreciate, it penetrates into her soul in such a way that tizayir Yosef min ha'ish. She will now be more careful about the law than you are. I remember once I was sitting with my parents eating a Friday night meal, and my mother served gefilte fish.
In the 1960s?
This would be in the 1970s.
Wow.
And my mother knew that I didn't eat what's called chadash. If anybody knows what chadash is, we don't have time for that now. So I was just about to take a bite into the gefilte fish, and my mother yells, "Stop!" I said, "Why?" This was gefilte fish from a very very religious, you know, satmaraj gacha. I said, there was no question about it. Right. She says it might have floured.
So what's so bad about it?
A flower is at that time of the year is generally assumed to be chadash, which I can't eat.
Right.
It's interesting that my mother was more careful than I was. You know, once a woman understands the halachas and you give her the proper guidance, she already goes beyond you. Then he says the following. Again, this is the paradox that I spoke about at the introduction. All this that I've told you about, the love that you have for your wife And on the contrary, I wanted even to perhaps curtail it, that it shouldn't go overboard because you might ignore your Avodas Hashem. That's all in the case of an Isha Maskeles, Shematza Isha Matza Tova. If she's a good woman, and she's very soft, and she really wants to learn, and she wants to dedicate herself to spirituality, that's great. Love her and respect her. Because Bevadai, and he gets very poetic, he says, Chut shel chesed moshech aleha. She has almost like a charming thread of a diadem of chesed that comes, that sort of, she glows and she radiates chesed. V'chaviv al baila. And no doubt that with that spiritual quality, with that illumination of spiritual lights, she's beloved to her husband. But now with the next word, which is called Omnom, if you find it, he goes on another path. And that's why I told you at the outset, this is the dilemma of a man who ends up in a very rough marriage. He says, Gavra denofel b'chulke gama bisha. He fell into a situation which is going to cause him evil. Isha kosh. He ended up with a very tough woman. Very tough. Now we can only begin to guess what he means by a tough woman. She probably yells at him a lot. She's always high strung. Always at the point to which she's angry. She has tainus. She has, you know, claims against the whole world. No one's good. And not even her husband. You know, she's always yelling, criticizing, screaming. Yeah, she rips in. She's critical.
Verbally abusive. That's the worst.
Now he says, "Hu omeid b'nisayon gadol." He is in a tremendous spiritual test. This is perhaps
explode.
More than that. That he appreciates her, he loves her, he respects her, and he doesn't divorce her. Notice, divorce is not even a footnote in the Peleoids. Why? Because Hashem is the one who found him, this woman. This was not accidental. V'tzarek chozek, he's got to strengthen himself. L'snaig ima b'sholom, to deal with her in a peaceful way, reus and friendship, l'chvod hashchina, because this is what Hashem wants. And he has to make sure he understands that sometimes even a cedar tree gets caught in a fire. Cedar tree is usually considered a very strong tree, but he now has to deal with a very difficult woman. So you and I would say, well, just throw her again. That's not even an option. He never whispers that word, gerish. All you have to understand is that God led you to this woman, he led you to this marriage, and he expects you to live up to this nisayon. God doesn't test you unless he believes in you. So how do you succeed in this very difficult marriage? Number one, he says, Dayenu shematzilos osanu minachet hakalos. He says the first thing, he has to appreciate her. How can you appreciate a tough woman who always screams, she's always high strung, she berates you, she berates everyone else, she's argumentative, she can't get along with anybody?
That's a very big problem.
So you know what you appreciate? She saves you from sin.
Yeah, that's the best
in thing. Other words, if you weren't married to her, who knows what you would be doing.
Mm-hmm.
You at least have that physical relationship. And he goes on to quote a saying that sometimes women, daitam ktsar, they're very short-winded, they're very high-tempered, if it's an isha kasha. L'chein mimenu tsar sheyavu asecha. He's really got to work hard. And obviously, every situation is different. Im overes al daito machisato, she violates his will, she gets him angry. Yishmarucho, he has to control his anger. This is a tremendous challenge. For a person to be insulted, to be berated, people are, in this case, his wife is cursing him, is getting angry at him. I don't know what she's doing. Hopefully she's not throwing a roller pin at him, right? And he has to control his anger. V'yein tzarech lomer, it goes without saying that he has to control his desire to lash out back at her, to humiliate her, to curse her, or even hit her. Chas v'chalil, he says, heaven forbid. That belongs to people of the lowest rank. And at the end of the day, nafsho chovel, he's hurting himself. But rather, b'per rach, he always has to respond to our anger with a soft-spoken tongue, with, he calls it, a sweet cheek. Yochi cheno, he has to tell him this is not the way to behave, but he has to do it with a very sweet, sweet way. And then he says, yispol ol, he has to suffer this tremendous yoke, this burden. Yeah, olive, he'll be insulted below olive and not an insulter. Right, he's on the passive receiving end. The akabel olive din shamayim v'simcha. If he's in a bad marriage, it means that he should accept God's judgment with joy. Why kimei Hashem ish le'isha? Because the pasuk testifies that this marriage came to him through God. Now again, at some point, if everything gets totally out of hand, and he sees, number one, that she can't control herself, he sees that he can't control herself, if it gets to the point where he has to throw in the towel, that's different. But the Peleoids doesn't even imagine getting to that point. If you appreciate her for what she is and what she does for you, if you give her very soft rebuke, if you're very careful about controlling your anger, then you have succeeded in this great test. And therefore, Misha Yeshlo Isha Ra, if a person never falls into such a marriage which is a difficult woman, Eino Roa Gehenna. This is what we call Gehenna Avdi Velt. He got his Gehenna paid up here in this world. And he goes on to say, Hayoroi Levaki Shishara. That's a good deal. Everybody would like to potter up the Gehenna here in this world, then go straight to Gan Eden. So he should be praying to marry a bad woman. But the only thing is, he might not be able to succeed at the test. So getting an Ishara is not a great deal. It's conditionally, unless you can succeed. Lufi Chomer Din Gehenna. In other words, he might get worse Gehenna if this Isha Kasha, this Isha Ra, if he doesn't, but Kevot Sha'omer Ben Yisayon, if he's successful, he controls his anger and his tongue, he sees the good, he does the best he possibly could in the bad circumstances, he finds himself, Lo Yirash Tarta Gehenna, he'll get his Gehenna in this world, he won't get a second Gehenna, God only gives you one Gehenna. El Yekabel B'Ava V'Yekabel Socher Tov Ba'amol. He should accept it with love and now on the next page he says, why is it so important to love your wife? The Gemara says in Masechta Nida that if you're in a relationship where you Chas V'Shalom, you resent your wife.
And what is page 9?
Yeah, it should say page 9 on it, or on the right side. It'll say, yeah, that's how I made it. Don't embarrass me.
No, Chas V'Shalom.
I tried to do the best I could.
Chas V'Shalom.
There's somebody tampered with the machine, so I have to learn the new regulations for this machine.
Yeah. I hope you forgive me. That was not my.
No. I'm just saying. I'm sorry. I disappointed you, but I tried my best.
I wasn't disappointed.
So he says that there's something called b'nei snua. This is a Gemara Nida that says that if you have a relationship with a woman and you despise her, it's your own wife, then the children will not come out Chas V'Shalom to be good children. So shalom bayis is necessary. Is critical not just for the relationship itself, but also for the children. And therefore, if he successfully works very hard, l'fil tzara agra, the Mishnah tells us, he'll get rewarded according commensurate to the amount of work he does. V'hagader limnoa divrei rivos mi beso. Oh, now he says that what's the most common bone of contention in marriage that can bust up shalom bayis? He says when a man counts every single penny. When he pinches himself, every time his wife spends a dime, really? He says, if he wants to be moner, he wants to prevent rivos, he wants to guarantee shalom bayis, lo yedag de kol kach bo tzos habayis al kol pruta pruta. Let him be laid back about how she spends the money. Because a woman sometimes is jealous of some other woman and she wants to spend the money, she wants to have as beautiful of a thing as her friend. And therefore, l'chein, the bottom line is, ish asher kibirchas, whatever God bestowed upon him, whatever material goods and possessions and monies came his way because God gave him that, yarbe, he should therefore, in a commensurate way, add to covered beso, dover beito, he should always be adding, again, if he has the wherewithal, to add gifts for his wife, yephiasis ishto,
and flowers every Friday, and every
maybe Saturday. Flowers on Friday, yeah. That's a good musa shmuz. Flowers on Friday. And he says, Gadol Shalom Bayis, how great and how significant in the eyes of God is Shalom Bayis, that mutar limcho kashema gadol litan shalom minish lishto. What parash does he have in mind?
Sota.
And in the parasha of Sota, we erase the name of God in order to create Shalom Bayis. That's how important Shalom Bayis is. And therefore, a person has to work with Gvura, Yigbar HaIsh. He has to have absolute courage and strength. Lahavir Rami Beis, to make sure there's no evil in his house. And then the Shekhinah will be there in his house. And then, in the next paragraph that starts Umichlal, he gives a whole Musashmus about husbands who travel. He doesn't like this idea of husbands who go on long trips. He says that that's out of the perspective, out of the box as far as Ava is concerned. Again, occasionally he has to go for business purposes, for family reasons, for health, whatever it might be, he has to go. But not time after time. Number one, he's Gorem Roli Atzma. Why? Because he's going to think all sorts of thoughts when he's on the road, if he's separated from his wife for long times. And Odba, and another reason why it's so evil to go on these long trips, is because of Tzara de Gufa Leishto. He actually causes anguish, physical pain to his wife. Because her strength, her intensity of love is such that her heart breaks when her husband leaves her for such a long period of time. Again, if he goes off in the morning at 5 and he comes back at night at 5, that's okay. But if he goes for 5 weeks or 5 months, that's a whole different story. And therefore, Chayit Tzar Tichya, if he goes on frequent trips, long trips, she will suffer Chayit Tzar. That's not a love relationship. That's not a healthy relationship. If he does have to go on a long trip, Lefachot, the barest minimum, is Yizar Lefaisa B'Dvarim, he should try to pacify her and bring her close to him by maybe calling her, Biger Shlomim, by sending her letters. Lemores Bedam Ha'ava. Mores Bedam means, you know, when in Kodshim, when the dam was received, the blood was received in the receptacle, in order to do the Zrika on the Mizbech, you had to keep it liquid, in a liquid shape. So in order to make sure it doesn't coagulate, you have to stir it around. So he's got to stir up the Ava to make sure it's still intense by sending her letters and by being mafayis her. Vashar tasig yodu, if he's out in a very distant country, but he has the wherewithal financially, yishlach matanos v'chafaj, send a gift, you know, special delivery or what's it called?
UPS.
And chafatzim, he should send her objects. Lahachios lev nidochim nidkoyim, because her lev, her heart, is down in the dumps. She's lonely, and there's nothing like the loneliness of a woman. Ulesameach es nefesh ishto, by sending her these gifts, it could lighten her burden and bring her into a better mood. And mitzvah rabba techosh. Ad kan hakofa al. This is all the love of a man for a woman. And now we flip it around. The love of a woman for a man. Ubiyoser. And he says that the love of a woman for a man, Yoser. What does Yoser mean?
Yeah.
It exceeds. It exceeds even beyond the love of a man for a woman. I never would have said such a thing. But he's talking on a spiritual level. He's not talking on a physical level. Perhaps physically. Oh,
and as he said, he lived 200 years ago.
Correct. And saying that 200 years ago, a woman's obligation is to love her husband, ulechavdo, and to respect him, kimelech, as if he were a king.
200 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I saw it in my parents' marriage also. Again, sometimes my mother would get disappointed, but my father was not perfect. He was great, but he wasn't perfect.
He was busy running the show.
Right. Everybody has their, had little limitations.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't want to get too personal, but my mother really respected my father tremendously, looked up to him. My father was much more learned than she was, for sure. And again, I'm not going back centuries in time. This was what I was raised on. And women in the time of my mother, when she was being raised in Brooklyn, New York, they got a limited education. It got better in the next generation and better in the third generation. The men, on the other hand, were learning yeshivas. My father had the best rebbeim you could even imagine. He studied at the feet of Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, one of the Gedolei Hador. But the women didn't get that education.
Yep.
So there was a certain sense of respect and awe that a woman had for her husband. And according to the Peleoids, that generates the following situation. Here's the ultimate goal. And that is Lasos Ritzono Kiritzono. That her will and what she desires is what he desires. Again, only in the spiritual sense. That's what he says. Lishtadil Loretis Lasov Das Baila. The Ikar Ha'av on the fourth line, if you can underline these words, is Avas HaNefesh. Again, that same phrase that we saw before. She loves his nefesh. And therefore, how does her sacrifice, in the context of her love and her respect for him, express itself? Timsar Nafsha L'sayo B'avodas Hashem Yisbar. She'll deny herself the pleasures of life all for the sake of his ability to serve Hashem. So she realizes she wants to spend time with him, as we said before, in this love relationship. He wants to spend time with her, she with him. But she's going to overcome that desire. She's going to curtail it, even if it means moments of loneliness. Again, he's not going on a long trip, but he is studying in the Beis Medrash, or whatever he's doing. He's doing it for the sake of Avodas Hashem. She has to be absolutely supportive of his. V'zeh chelka, all those two words are very critical. And that's her chelek. In other words, whatever mitzvah and avoda he's involved in, she gets a chelek of it. That's the Gemara says in Masechta Sota, that Nashim B'Bai Kazachian, how do women get a chelek if they're not studying Torah? The answer is, they send their husbands out to the Beis Medrash, and that's how they get their chelek. And therefore, she should always speak to him, the Mesek, with sweetness, Tidaber Elov, in Tzricho Ladricho B'derech Tova. Interesting. Until now, who is the Madrich and who is the Nidrach? The man was the Madrich. Mm-hmm. Now all of a sudden, the turn of the thing. This is like Esther. First Mordechai comes to Esther and he says to her, God gave you the queenship because he wants you to speak up and save the Jewish people. And then after that, all of a sudden, notice, who's running the show?
Mordechai.
It switches. The whole table switches. It starts with Mordechai. Mordechai is the philosopher.
Mordechai Esther Osa. And at the end it says, Vayas Mordechai Kechol Asher Tzitalav Esther.
That's excellent. So initially, Mordechai is the teacher. He's going to give the directives. He's understanding the philosophical concept of Hashgacha Pratis and why is it that she was appointed queen? How did this happen? But then, as soon as Mordechai does that, he slips into a passive role. And now she calls all the shots. And that's basically what he's saying here, the Peleoids, that he tzricho ladricho b'derech tova. She's got to now be madrich. I remember my parents' marriage. This is before I was born. My father got offered a very tempting job in the rabbinate. I won't go into details.
In America?
In America.
RCA?
No. RCA would have been great. I'm talking about something on a different level, where they pay a rabbi what he's supposed to be paid.
A fortune.
Yeah, a fortune. $90,000 a year, where wow. $90,000 was worth $500,000, and I'm not exaggerating.
Wow.
And my mother said,
no.
If you take that job, it's either me or that job.
Right.
Because my father was very tempted. Again, at the end, I don't know if he would have taken it, because they wanted it because he was such a Talmudic scholar. But again, I'm going back almost 100 years. Life in America was very different then. The conservative movement was very powerful, very wealthy. Today, the conservative synagogues are losing a lot of their membership.
So there's a reform.
But reform for sure. Because they're not replenishing it with the next generation.
I know. Everyone's going towards the truth.
So you have these tremendous edifices, which you'll see, for example, in New York City, even. I'm sure it's you could probably multiply it in other cities. And, you know, I don't go there on the Shabbos, but I'm sure if you'd go there on the Shabbos, you'd see empty pews because the next generation are not a lot of intermarriage, Nebuch, and so forth and so on. So in any event, at some point in the history of American Jewry, the conservative movement was very powerful and very wealthy. They had synagogues that would take up an entire square block. Some of those synagogues today are Orthodox because the conservatives moved out and some Frumah Yidden started moving in. This
and
is
it's
now,
unfortunate a lot of these conservative shuls were sold to churches.
Orthodox shuls were also sold to churches. I hate to tell you. You go to Bedford-Stuyvesant and you can see under the cross, you know, if you look carefully, you'll see a Jewish star.
I've seen it.
But in any event, she now takes over. She's now in charge. She takes charge. To be Madrichi B'derech Tova, Ulenachamo B'yeis Tzaroso. Unbelievable. I would underline these three words and bold them. I think this should be engraved on the portal of every marriage, of every, you know, married house. Lenachamo B'yeis Tzaroso. The greatest service a woman could do for a husband is to give him encouragement when things are going down, down, down. When he's being faced with the most difficult disappointments, and it crushes him because a man is extremely sensitive to failures in the world of occupation and so forth and so on. Imagine the case of a man who loses his job. He has no wind. He can't get out of bed. He's depressed, and that's where a great wife could save his life. V'takum biod laila li'oro li'ovdo u'li'ovdo. He says that she should, if need be, wake up in the middle of the night in order to wake him up. It's time for, again, if it's the middle of the night, maybe it's time for Vasikin, or maybe it's time for Tikkun Chatzos, if you're a Hasidic Yid. Whatever it is, the Ein Tzarich Lomer goes without saying, she tizayr b'chol oz shalolios grovim in Ezekin, and therefore it goes without saying how much more so that she has to be very careful not to disturb him and be detrimental and take away his time, his precious time. She's batel, he'll be batel from avodas Hashem. Because of a chas v'shalom, ki aisha he tisas avon. If she causes to derail him, then she will carry that sin. But he says, ma dabar ki lo kol adeil shavos. I can't give you any uniform rule that will apply straight across the board in every situation. Every scenario is different. Rak hakol lefi mashu adam, depending on who he is. Meaning, she has to know her husband well, know his nefesh, know his challenges, know his capabilities and his potentials. Tzrichol esnagimol lefimi dosov. And all that she deals with him, she's got to be a psychologist. She has to have a degree, a PhD in psychiatry here, to know her husband's psyche. And then she can deal with him lefimi dosov in a way that fits him. Like we say every morning, shosali kol tzarki, it's got to fit me. V'seichel tov, b'cheinu v'seichel tov. And if this be the case, if she succeeds, so he has to succeed in having a positive influence on her, and when he has to, in a sense, give her tochacha, he does it with noam siach, and she in turn is misnaig imo b'lefimidosa b'cheinu v'seichel ven zivugam ola yof. This is a parable. This is a paradigm of a beautiful marriage, be ava ve'achva, with love and brotherhood. And therefore the Pasuk says in Mishlei, chachmos noshin bonsa besa, that the wisdom of a woman builds the house. Ve'isha yiras Hashem itis halel. This is the more famous part of that same chapter, it's a different chapter, but in Mishlei, because this is what we recite in Eishes Chayim. Isha Yiras Hashem Hitisal. It means that she gets more of a praise, she deserves more of a praise than he does, because her Yiras Hashem will carry the family. That's why my father used to always teach me that you should be very careful with what's called chinuch banot, chinuch banos. You know, make sure the women get the right education, because ultimately in the family, the children and their religiosity, their spirituality will be determined more by the mother than by the father. She spends all the time, she raises the children, she has that special caring and close love relationship with her children. We have to train our women, because the future of our nation is with the women. Because kol kvoda basmel pnima, she should be tsanua, she should be, you know, this week's parasha, right, with Sarah, you mean, that she's in, no, actually, it'll be next week's parasha, that Sarah is in the Ohel, you remember? And that's for the Malachim, when they come to visit Avram, they point out, where is Sarah? She's in the Ohel. They hint to Avram that he should appreciate his wife, which is a mind-boggling concept in Shalbais, that even a relationship like Avram and Sarah, the Malachim felt if they could have an extra opportunity to add to the Shalom Bayis, to increase the Shalom Bayis, the love of Avram for his wife, that's a great opportunity, a great mitzvah. And that's what Chazal say on the Pasuk of Hayu L'Basar Echad, that ultimately in the paradigm of marriage, they become like one body. Ishto Kegufo. And that's what, you remember, there was a great tzaddik in Yerushalayim, they wrote a book about him, Ish Tzaddikaya. His name was Rav Aryeh Levin. Did you ever hear of him?
Yeah.
Oh, so they say about Rav Aryeh Levin that once he's near my house. Yeah, and that once he came to the doctor because his wife had a problem with her leg, and he says to the doctor, "Our leg hurts." That's what he didn't even think about. He said, "Our leg hurts." You know, it's for Hayu L'Basar Echad. And if we mention Shalom Bayis, I should mention the famous story of the Chofetz Chaim. You know, the Chofetz Chaim was medagdik b'mitzvahs. He was so careful about mitzvahs, beyond belief. And once his nephew was in the house, and it was Leil Chanukah. And, you know, the makpidim, those who are careful about Ner Chanukah, will light at the very moment that the obligation emerges with Shkia, with sunset. And the sun had already set, and the Chofetz Chaim was not lighting the Chanukah candles. And this went on for half hour, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Finally, the Chofetz Chaim's Rebbetzin steps in. She was out. And the Chofetz Chaim says immediately, "Let's go light Chanukah candles."
I wouldn't light it without you.
So, exactly. So his nephew asked his uncle, he says, how could it be that you would be so laid back about the mitzvah of Chanukah? He says, "You don't understand. The Gemara says that if you have one candle on the night of Shabbos, Friday evening, and you don't have the wherewithal of getting access to another candle, should you light, and it's Chanukah, I'm sorry I didn't mention that, and it's Chanukah, Leil Shabbos Chanukah, should you light it as a Chanukah candle because of the mitzvah of Pirsum Anes, or should you light it as a Shabbos candle?"
No, you can use it for both.
You can't use it for both. It's one or the other, because we paskin on Neiros Halolu Kodesh Asulanu L'Shtavish Ben, and a Shabbos candle is for purpose of benefiting from it. So you can't have one candle which is both a Chanukah candle and a Shabbos. It's an either or. So what should you do?
Use it for Chanukah.
Use it for Shabbos. Why? Gemara says because Shalom Bayis is greater than Pirsum Anes. So he says here I have to like Chanukah candles. It's already Shkia, and that's the mitzvah of Pirsum Anes. But if my wife is not home, she may be slighted. Even if she'll look the other way, but deep down in her nefesh, my husband didn't wait for me. I was on a very important meeting or whatever I had to do, some enterprise. So Shalom Bayis takes precedence. And we live in a time where, unfortunately, Shalom Bayis has become such a terrible challenge in so many marriages. You know, like I said, at the time of the Peleoids, divorce wasn't really an option. You know, you understood that God put you in this challenge and you did the best you can. But today, people are too lazy. They don't want to go through all the work that it takes.
It's like throwing a dish towel away.
Yeah, you marry a woman and it's not going well, so just give her a get. I mean, what's the big deal? It costs you a couple of bucks and go on for the next one. And so this is the attitude today. You know, there's no absolute commitment to marriage. And if you go into marriage from the get-go with that kind of attitude, you know, it's going to
work out.
It's going to be very tough. You have to be really totally committed. May Hashem ish l'isha, that it came from Hashem. And therefore he says, Tzrichol yos miskashetes l'bayla. Interesting. You know, you're given the background and the historical context of the Peleoites, you would think he's the last one to speak about a woman putting a, you know, beautifying herself for her husband. No. This is critical. She shouldn't walk around looking like a schlump, or whatever you pronounce it. She's got to beautify herself. Uzehira binikius. She'd be very careful about her cleanliness. Well, I don't know why he didn't mention that for the husband too. I would add that as a footnote. Vitara. And her purity. Now he's getting into the laws of Nida. And Ubeseder Ha'otzah, and it's when she's allowed to go out and into the public eye. Lamalo Yechta Baila. Bishvil Shenosein Einov Bacheres. You know, if he's not attracted to her and she loses it, she'll say to herself, wait a minute, he's 45. We've been married for 25 years. I don't have to look beautiful for him. No. It's an ongoing challenge. You know, he might be tempted to look at another woman. That's the nature of a man. So therefore, she should always look beautiful. And if her actions are beautiful and spiritual and perfect, then that'll bring him closer to her. She'll always be attracted to her husband. So it's a combination of physical and spiritual. And if in these two levels she presents herself in a beautiful way, then that's going to guarantee the success of the marriage. Vehine, he says, Isha shachek bechek yirei elokim tinasen, if she's given over to fear of God, umagam im timtze toro gdua, he says that if she's in a situation that she has both Torah, meaning spiritual qualities, and Gedula, and she's very lofty and presentable. Havadai pshita shetechabdena v'tovena ava asa. These are guarantees that he will respect her and love her with a very intense love. Okay, now he addresses the next question. If we're going from the Hakafa Aleph, what I call the husband vis-a-vis the wife, and we spoke about a husband who finds himself in a difficult marriage with a tough woman, what about the opposite? What if a woman finds herself never living with a tough guy? He's abusive, he's angry, he curses, he doesn't respect her. B'yoseh tzarch lezareis le'isha. Now she needs tremendous zrizus. Zrizus means lazaris, to give her the strength and the fortitude to survive such a marriage. Again, he's not talking about the option of divorce. And he says, Nofal b'chelka, unfortunately, when Hashem saw to it that she would marry this fellow, her lot fell with an ish kasha b'midosav u'b'deosav, the way he thinks, the way he treats her, his attributes are very difficult. Nivze vechadal ishim. He's someone who's bazui. He's not humiliated. That's not the word. He's a person who he deserves to be humiliated. In other words, he's nivze. Nivze means that
obnoxious.
He's obnoxious. Yeah, something like that.
My brother-in-law.
Chasar kol tador. Don't start giving me lashon hara here, because
no.
I don't know your brother-in-law.
So it's not lashon hara. You don't know who he is.
Yeah, but I might meet him someday.
I don't think so.
I find my way in Brooklyn very often.
Yeah, but I don't think you'll ever meet him.
Never know.
I don't think you.
I might find out his name. Okay, I'm not curious. Believe me, I'm not going to try to find out. Anyway, chasar kol tov. This man that she married really doesn't have too many redeeming values. Now, you don't have page 10, do you?
Nope.
Okay, so we have about 5 minutes. I'll just sort of summarize the main points on page 10, which is the the end of this essay, he says, she, despite these difficulties, she should not come to humiliate him and to despise him in her heart, but rather, once again, al kol panim tizor b'chvodo. Why? Because dvar melech malko shel olam aleha. In other words, this is the way God set up her situation, her challenge. Umalo b'hadi kavshi d'rachmana. She can never really understand the divine way, but she has to accept it. That's her challenge. It's a great Messiah. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu mezavek zivugim, God put this zivug together. Al-Kain, kol ma shemuto oleh lasos tasa. Whatever she's required to do within the context of marriage, she has to do. Now, the balance of this article we'll have time for perhaps next week. I'm going to look it over and see if we should study it, because I have a lot of different essays in this sefer called Peleoids, which I want to do with you. So I might decide that you'll rely on my better judgment that maybe we covered most of what he has to say on this topic. So I don't want to waste, so to speak, another Tuesday night on the balance of this. There are two or three paragraphs, though, that maybe I would try to see if we could push in. And next week, I would like to talk to you about the article on Gvura, on strength. Because you know that the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos that Gvura, in a Jewish context, is not, you know, the heavyweight champion of the world. Gvura is HaKovish as Yitzra. We are constantly surrounded by temptations and by challenges, and the Yetzer Hara is working overtime. And what does it mean to be a Kovesh es Yitzro? What is Gevura? So that's what Blinetta will cover next time. If there are any questions, I'll take questions. And then at 8:30, Mr. Hashem, we have a Chumash class on Parshas Noach, Hashkafa, and Parsh. So let me collect these pages for anyone who doesn't want them. Again, if you want to take them, then it's perfectly okay with me. David?
Yeah, I'm wondering, in his day, when he wrote the Sefer, when the marriages, unlike today, were more arranged. So if they were arranged, the husband and wife didn't see each other so much beforehand, which makes it more of a gamble than the husband and wife being, like, as you describe, a mean-spirited person. Today, the couple meets more often, they go out, they date, they see. But maybe right. In this day and age, the parents arrange that they have regular say-so. In which case, if they're lucky, the spouse is great. If they're not lucky, the spouse is...
So I just want to make two points. Point number one is, when you use the word lucky in the Peleoids' vocabulary, that's not lucky. It's right. Not a question of lucky. You may see it as lucky or unlucky, right. But he sees it as, this is the situation that right. God carved out for right. you. Just like you were born into
wealth
or poverty. You know, you have good looks, you don't have good looks, you have intelligence, you don't have intelligence. I mean, there are psychological issues. There's so much that God sort of puts on you, and he says you have to do the best you can with what you have. The same thing is in marriage. So I don't think it's a matter of luck in his nomenclature. The second point I want to make is that even today there are many marriages that are arranged. It's true that, barring, you know, some very, very religious, you know, Hasidic communities where they just go out of the house for a few minutes, if that. But in most communities, even though the marriage is arranged, it means that they know each other. In fact, in Brooklyn, when I was growing up, there was a great rabbi in Borough Park, Rav Moshe Bick. I don't know if you ever heard of him. And Rav Moshe Bick Paskin, that you have to go out with a girl at least 9 times. I don't know how he came up with the number 9, thus basically. I don't know. So it's not just a matter of, and now that we are equipped with a vision of Shalom Bayis and what it means to be in a relationship and make the best of it in an expansion of love, the maximize love and respect, now in the dating situation, we should date a woman with the objective to find a woman with which you can create the best marriage possible. And therefore you should do whatever work you have to do in order to clarify beforehand. Again, if you come from a religious family where they do 90% of the legwork for you, your parents and your siblings, yeah, very often a sibling who gets married will introduce a younger sibling to her, if it's a girl, it goes with a boy, to her husband's best friend. And this is what goes on. So that, in a sense, you already projected, you know, light years into this situation even before you date the girl. But if on the other hand, you know, you're out there in the free market, you know, and you happen to meet a girl here, there, or elsewhere, you know, it's very tricky because, you know, the women will present one, you know, their best foot forward, and the men, you know, they look like, oh, this guy's God's gift to the world, and then you find that. I want to emphasize one point to you. Remember, he says that the bone of contention is when he counts pennies, and he pinches himself when he sees her spending money. That is so destructive and corruptive to the marriage. And in dating, this is a very important issue.
Well, if you come see, the girl says, you know, I don't want to go out with you again.
Exactly. And it could be the girl, it could be the boy. Usually it's the boy. And if she's very sensitive, and I don't think there's anything wrong with her testing him. You know, she doesn't have to say it explicitly, I'm testing you. But she can use her cunning and her cleverness to put him in a situation and see what happens. All of a sudden he loses it. You know, they're in a subway and he doesn't want to spend a nickel to buy her it's no longer a nickel, but to buy her a drink. Let her go thirsty. You know, that's a red light. That's a red flag. Because that is that's a guarantee for a bad marriage. You want to do whatever you can to maximize the possibility, the probability that it'll be a good marriage, not a bad marriage. That's your status. That's your challenge. So in dating, to make sure that whatever is necessary for love and mutual respect and not, you know, not an angry person, not a lashon hara person, a person who is sensitive, and most important, a person who is not stingy, because stinginess is the worst thing in a marriage. And if you read any of the books about marriage today, you'll see that one of the most primary causes of divorce is issues of finances. You know, he's very stingy and she needs money to this, that, and the other thing. Again, there's always going to be some ironing it out. You know, there's going to be a, you know, they're not always going to be with the same, you know, same eye and the same thing about where to spend the money. But the basic approach is let her have the money if you have it to be spent. Okay, Rabbi Moshe, we'll stop here. We shall be zochet to great Amas Isha Leishto and Ish Leishto and Isha Leish. If anyone here is staying for the Chumash class, I have for you photocopies of the pages for Chumash. So let me just figure out where that is, and I'll get that. Oh, here it is.
Can I copy page 10 from here?
Yes, please. If you could bring it back, because I...
Yes.
Regards from the rabbi.
Okay. Gentlemen, are you going to join me for a little Chumash? Shalom Aleichem. How are you?
I was going to talk for a while.